No. We'll do it live! Fuck it!
Hey. I don't know. I changed nothing. I just restarted it. Fine.
You restarted Skype or your computer?
I've rebooted the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, like I always have to redo my Skype, but I don't really turn this computer off, so I don't know.
Maybe next time I'll just close Skype and reopen it. I don't know.
Yeah. It's weird. You come up with a name for your show?
Yes. I thought that would be a good idea.
Yeah, okay, everybody, I'm Mike Coughlin. This is Matt Grady. Welcome to HalfCredit.com. And Matt now has the name of the show.
Oh, a name. I do not have a name, no.
I do not have a name. What did you think I just asked you?
I thought you said, did I have anything for this show?
Oh, no, a name. I was so excited. I'm like, this is going to be the Grady's Hour.
No, I wish I had a name. I will work on that.
All right, for now, it shall remain Matt Grady carries the show here at HalfCredit.com. Alongside the two of us are two dogs who are currently in the midst of chewing bones. They have switched back and forth as the San Francisco Giants play the New York Mets in the background. By the time you listen to this, you'll know if I'm very happy or if people in New York have yet another reason to be dicks. Fuck you, New York. You're going to lose. The Puggles are here. Matt, take it away.
All righty. I was thinking we could get the bad stuff out of the way first, and then move on to more pleasant subject matter. But I'm assuming at this point, probably you and everybody's heard about Josh Saman. He passed away, I think today, officially. He was a veteran UFC middleweight, former tough contestant. He wrote for Bloody Elbow. He actually authored a book about his life. He did a three-part series with Jeff Nowitzki on drug testing. He owned an MMA promotion in Northern Florida. Kind of like a renaissance man in a lot of ways. You don't see a lot of fighters get to the UFC and elite level, be an author, own a company, and do all this stuff at the same time. I guess he was found unresponsive in his apartment like in the middle of last week, but was breathing, had a pulse. But after several days in the hospital, intensive care, that sort of thing, he was unable to pull through it. He was only 28, a young guy. His roommate, Troy Kirkingberg, was also found in the apartment. He was dead when, the ambulances arrived. Foul play has been ruled out, but the causes of death haven't officially been determined. I think we can all kind of guess and speculate on what happened. I don't like doing that sort of thing. You have any memories of Josh?
Nothing that jumps out. I mean, he was a solid fighter in an era where being a solid fighter basically wasn't enough anymore. But he had his issues. I hate saying demons because it's something I consciously decided not to talk about, like use the word demons, because demons implies you're not control and it's a way to shirk responsibility. Anyways, he reminds me, and this is very weird. Just today, I was, my razor broke. So I had to buy a new razor and I'm on Amazon. It's like things that you've looked at before. Would you like to look at it again? I'm like, sure, why not? And it was an Evan Tanner action figure. And
I was thinking the same thing. And it's like, really weird.
And it's funny because I'm like, yeah, I'll buy Evan Tanner's action figure. Why not? So I bought the figure like a dork. And then next thing I knew, I turned it on and Josh the man's dead. And he kind of had that,
Ultra look too.
Yeah, they kind of had like a wild, not quite part of this world, polymath approach to life. And he's one of those guys that you see him, and he liked to fight, but if he didn't fight, he'd find other ways in life to be fulfilled. And unfortunately, those types of personalities can be susceptible to other forms of extremism. And it sounds like he couldn't get his problems under control. I guess that's, in a weird way, like the best case scenario, because anything else is a murder or something really horrible. But geez, he's only 28. I mean, that's man alive. It just seems weird to me that you can do that much damage to yourself before you're even 30 years old that you can die. But I guess guys do it.
Yeah, there's no real good way to spin it. It's a bummer. Obviously you wish his family, the best. It's tough. Nobody wants to see anybody die that young for, whatever the reasons may have been. But anyway, obviously no good segue there. So we'll just move along. Last Saturday night, there was a UFC fight night. It was John Lineker versus John Dodson. Fight night 96. It was at the Moda Center in Portland, Oregon. I still don't know what Moda Center means.
But Portland, Oregon ties into the last story because Portland, Oregon has one of the highest rates of heroin use in the United States.
So I was unaware of that.
Yeah, they got a really... I don't know if it's good or bad, but lots of needles out in public. Them in Vancouver up there in Canada, eh? But so, yeah, you could segue Josh the
Manica. There's actually a documentary came out this past year about, like, not heroin, but, like, Oxycontin use, like, opiate abuse on the Cape, surprisingly enough. It's a problem everywhere. It's crazy.
Yeah, although it's weird because and I never know to trust the stats completely, but since... the dogs are growling at each other. Colorado completely legalized marijuana. The number of DUIs in the state has dropped. The number of the number of prescription ODs has dropped. The number of heroin deaths has dropped. Every single drug across the board, abuse, alcohol abuse is down. Domestic violence is down. And they brought in like $100 million or whatever in state taxes like in 2 or 3 years. It's kind of amazing in many respects.
Yeah, I know it's on the ballot, I think, in 4 states this year, including my home state of Massachusetts, just to legalize it just like alcohol in the state where, you know, there's stores that carry it. I mean, obviously it's going to be kind of dictated by the government a little bit on, like, what you can sell and how much and all that. But it would just be like booze. If you're over 21, you can go into a store and buy it, which is kind of mind-boggling to me. I'm not saying in a bad way, but it's just like, holy crap, that seems like it would never happen, but it's on the ballot and it's Massachusetts, so I'm thinking it'll probably go through.
Did Massachusetts vote to legalize gay marriage?
Yeah, first state.
Okay, because I'm trying to, it's like, because as much as you would think like liberal types would do that, California still voted against gay marriage. Like, that was only a California Supreme Court that overturned it, so like, even in like super blue California, weird shit still happens. So I wouldn't, I mean, you would hope that people in up there would have a more sensible approach to our drug policy. Frankly, I think if you're like, I think they should all just, if they were smart, jump on it quick before it's the money train runs out, because Colorado's getting all that money. And if you're Iowa, you could have been the Colorado of the Midwest. You would have had hundreds of millions of dollars in tourism and agriculture that could grow something besides soy. Iowa would have done really well. But instead, they didn't do it. And that gateway drug that led to Josh Simon's death, which was consumed mostly in Portland, Oregon, the site of this past Saturday's UFC.
Yes, this was actually the lowest rated fight night of the year. I'm guessing it's probably partially because it started at 11 p.m. Eastern time.
And it sucked.
And it was also headlined by John Lineker versus John Dodson. But what can you do? One of them has to be the lowest rated one of the year, right?
Yeah, and you know, it blessed their hearts at least for the main card. It was only 4 fights, so they knew they were only going to go 2 hours. So it really only lasted like 1 hour later than I'm used to. But still, fuck this, guys. Come on, I want my fight nights to be over by like 9 o'clock local time. I don't want this shit.
It's tough. So yeah, in the main event, Lineker beat Dodson by split decision. It went 5 rounds. Scores were 47-48, 48-47, 48-47 for Lineker. He squeaked by. I scored it for him 3-2. I want to say I scored rounds 2, 3, and 4 for Lineker. He was just a little bit, well, he wasn't a little bit more, but he was a lot more aggressive. I felt like he landed the better shots and kind of controlled the octagon. It felt like Dodson was kind of working his way around the outside of the cage most of the fight. I wouldn't say he was running, but he was definitely the more defensive fighter. I'm not saying he didn't throw it all. It wasn't a terrible fight by any stretch. It was a good fight. How did you score it?
I didn't really score it traditionally. I mean, I had it in kind of one of those gray areas. Like, when it was over, I initially thought that Dodson would win. Just the nature of the two fighting, and I could just see, okay, it went five rounds. People come with their preconceived notions that if it goes five rounds, it's going to be Dodson's decision. He never really got knocked down in the fight, so that helped him. And I thought, I don't know, maybe the judge will think that Lineker was swinging and missing a lot or something of the sort. But, you know, as a fight overall, it was very close. I thought Dodson fought basically the way he had to fight. You know, obviously, I mean, Kyle Darn, even the couple times they were close, you could just see the power of Lineker just everywhere he hits, arms, body, hips, legs, head, whatever. It clearly affected Dodson. Like, he did not like to get hit there by Lineker. It's too bad that Lineker missed weight and probably has to go back like three places in line, but I also don't think that realistically he's going to beat Dominick Cruz. I think that the reason he won this fight is my general observations over the years about how judges score things, which is judges score the most significant events that happen during a round, and Dodson spent a bunch of time dancing and peppering shots, whereas Lineker would have constant pressuring movement and two or three flurries that stuck out in your mind. Like, you'd remember the time that Dodson threw a lot and landed some shots. You don't then, but, because that's kind of unique. And all the crap that Dodson does, where he just kind of darts in and out, maybe a shot here, maybe he misses it, that just fades into the miasma of the fight. And I think that that's probably why Lineker got the nod.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of it depends on what, as a judge, I mean, it's hard to judge the judges, I guess, but what they consider important, you know, the octagon control stuff and pressure, that sort of thing. What do they consider important? And granted, if I was Dodson, I'd be darting around the outside of the cage too. I don't want to get hit by John Lineker either. But whatever, it was a close fight. Some people were calling it a classic online. I did not feel this was a classic fight by any stretch. Did you get that vibe?
No. I mean,
watch this a bunch more times.
As soon as I saw someone say that, I just genuinely looked at my iPad. I'm like, what the hell? What fight were you, like, a classic?
If you I thought it was good. I mean, it was two skilled guys going at it, but I will never watch this fight again.
No,
probably, like, not think about it.
I thought it was
ever again.
You know, I thought it was below average at best, maybe average. Really? Like, yeah. But only average in the, you know, it's a Tuesday evening and I'm watching it by myself. But, like, if you were with, like, a group of people or something and for that kind of atmosphere, this wasn't a fucking classic. I mean, it was just like Mighty Mouse and Dodson had way better fights than this. I mean, God damn, just, it wasn't even close to the best fight on the card. Like, just shit, fucking classic, you asshole. Stop just throwing terms around.
I saw that more than once, and I my reaction was the same as yours. I'm like, ugh. Afterwards, Lineker, of course, is calling for a bantamweight title shot against Dominick Cruz. I don't think he's there yet. Obviously, he missed weight by half a pound. Obviously, Lineker's had weight issues in the past. He used to fight at 125, moved up to 135 a couple fights ago because he missed weight at 125 four times. So this was his fifth time missing weight. He only missed by half a pound, but it's crazy. And obviously, you can't trust him to get to 135. He weighed in at 136.5 for this fight. You got to make him make weight at least once before getting Cruz, wouldn't you think?
Oh, I think he needs another fight for sure. If, I mean, again, there's TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt are both, I think, ahead of him in line, whether deserving or not. Just there's more to it with those two.
I think they're both more deserving.
Yeah. I mean, Lineker is like number three or whatever the fuck that means. The only thing I can say in his defense, and it's not much of a defense, is that he did the early morning weigh-in at 136.5. And yeah, this is actually something that's kind of weird. You get one shot with those scales.
Right.
Like, you don't get to come back for, like, you don't get, like, an extra hour to make weight or anything like that, which I don't actually understand why. Because you still have the option of weighing in later in the day. And I think if you weigh in.
It's a 2-hour window they have, I believe.
Yeah, but they get one shot, and if they do it at 9, and if it's 9 to 11 and they miss it at 9, they're done. They don't get to come back at 10:30 and give it another go. So otherwise, I think everybody line up right away. So if you miss one, you don't get another shot, and with the way that these scales can be kind of wonky, and especially a lot of the non-digital scales, they cannot read a quarter pound, so they will read it down or they'll read it up. But
what do you think his deal is, though? It's like he's got 10 more. You think he's just totally undisciplined clearly he's undisciplined when it comes to staying on top of his weight, but he's got 10 more pounds to play with. It's like he's gained 10 more pounds and is still probably doing the same thing he was when he's trying to get down to 125. He's just stepping in the cage weighing the same amount more that he used to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head who Lineker trains with. If it's a respectable camp, I have no idea. My only other thought would be, like, maybe he's, like, you know, the best of, like, a smaller camp in Brazil, and maybe they don't understand these things and shit like that. But, I mean, missing 136, I mean, that's... I kind of want to give him half a bit benefit of the doubt, because I don't think he's missed at 35. And so, I mean, it doesn't seem like he's ever had trouble before. And he fought a hard five rounds. So when he fought a hard five rounds against a cardio machine, that's the kind of thing that tells me, like, if you miss by half a pound, that might have just been a miscalculation with your scale versus their scale or whatever it may be. Because most guys who come in and they just barely miss the weight, you could tell they've been drawn and sucking water, they tend to perform much poorly the next night cardio wise and if Lineker would just, that was all he had left in his body, couldn't do any more like Cyborg, then I think he would have showed up the next night. But the fact that it didn't tells me I'm more willing to bet that it was a screw up with a scale or something like that. And again, it doesn't excuse it, because everyone else... Well, no, not everyone. Three Brazilians missed it, I think, and which makes me wonder if they had a scale that was in kilograms or something, and they weren't paying attention.
Yeah, well, the guy who missed by 5 pounds.
Sometimes you just don't care. Some men just like to watch the world burn. That's all there is to it.
So, obviously, if we're going to bypass Cruz for Lineker next, who would you like to see Lineker fight next?
I was thinking, I say you do Cruz and Garbrandt on top, and underneath you have Dillashaw and Lineker.
Okay.
I mean, to me, they're the top four guys. I can't, you know, I'm sure somebody else at 35 is in the mix in the area there, but yeah, I mean, Dillashaw's real close. The Sun Tao just lost to Dillashaw, so he's out for a bit. I say you do those four guys, and that way if somebody gets injured, you have a main event either way.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably swap them. I'd probably do Cruz and Dillashaw and then Lineker versus Garbrandt. But, I mean, tomato, tomato. What else is going on? Then in the co-main, we had Alex Oliveira, Cowboy Oliveira, defeating Will Brooks. It was a pretty even fight. It looked like Brooks hurt a rib early on, maybe in the first round somewhere. It was pretty competitive. They were kind of seemed similar levels. Oliveira looked much bigger in the cage, and he did miss weight by 5.5 pounds. But in the third, Oliveira finished it with strikes on the ground. Afterwards, he... I don't even know what the term is. I mean, I know the term crotch chop. He definitely crotch chopped Will Brooks, and then kind of, I don't want to say flicked him off, but did like the hand to the chin gesture thing.
Like the Italian mob type of...
Yeah, I don't know what that's called, though. I'm sure there's a term for it.
Go fuck your mama. I don't know.
Except in Portuguese. Yeah. And then...
Uva Mojea.
Then Brooks gets up and kind of goes after Oliveira. I think Herb Dean had to step in between them. Brooks throws his mouthpiece at Oliveira, bounces off his head. That was probably the most exciting part of the fight. Yeah. But Oliveira rubbed a lot of people the wrong way with the crotch chop and his antics after the fight. I think it was mostly because he missed weight by so much.
Yeah.
Like, why are you being a dick when you basically had a 5.5-pound advantage, didn't come in to the fight prepared? It just kind of rubbed people the wrong way. I don't really care. But I can understand why Brooks was upset and went after him. The backstory, I guess, was Brooks called him a MF-er, and that means something a little different in Portuguese than in Brazil. Oh. There's a cultural thing. So he was pissed about that, and he says he's never going to apologize to Brooks. Whatever. It was probably the highlight of the show.
A Brazilian overreacting to something. Somebody probably said puta, which I think has like 15 meanings in Spanish, and I'm thinking Brazilian as well. Brazilians are very high strung about mothers, and like, they're like Italians. They're just really, really high strung about their moms. Like, you don't insult somebody's mom. It's like, dude, your mom's been dead for 30 years. You don't insult her honor and blah, blah, blah. And the fight sucked. And Charles Oliveira. Yeah, I mean, look, if you miss weight by 0.5 pound and you win, okay, you can kind of cheer. But when you miss it by a lot and it showed inside of the cage, like he was
there was a size difference.
Yeah, because sure. Like I'm looking and going, Phil Brooks is pretty big and he's in positions where he looks like he knows what he's doing more, but boy, oh boy, Oliveira's big. And then just to win and be like, yeah, I'm the greatest ever. You literally cheated to win. You cheated to beat a smaller human being. You're proud of this accomplishment, all because he said you're a motherfucker or whatever, and apparently in Portuguese, that's like a literal insult. It's like being called a kitty rapist or something like that. Like, nobody, you don't say that one. Yeah, nobody's a motherfucker. I've seen you Brazilian women. There's a lot of motherfuckers out there.
Prior to that, Zach Otto beat Josh Berkman by split decision.
Don't remember it.
Then I don't want to say a star-making performance because no one saw this show, but Brandon Moreno, who's on the current season of The Ultimate Fighter, he was the 16th seed in the tournament. He lost in the first round. Got this fight short notice with Luis Smoka. Beat him in the first round by submission with a guillotine. That was crazy, right? Because Smoka is good on the ground. Like, I've seen him rolling around in the UFC for years, just getting on top of guys, trying submissions. And Moreno's young. I think he's only like 22, 23. He's young, doesn't have a lot of experience. He's training in Mexico, where you wouldn't think he'd have this crazy ground game. But he pulled out the submission. Smoka tapped. Then afterwards, he cut a pretty good promo in broken English. That was pretty entertaining. He was talking about the UFC being magical and just kind of a charming guy. Came off really well, I thought.
Yeah, I thought he was memorable for a guy like he's on The Ultimate Fighter. I don't really remember that. Grant, I just fast forward to fights, but nonetheless, it came in here on late notice. Smoka's a good fighter, supposed to face Sergio Pettis. I mean, that's what this fight was supposed to be, which was supposed to be one of the highlighting fights. All of a sudden, that sucks. But for Smoka, and then you get Moreno, who, I mean, he looks 22. I think he is 22. He has got like the unbridled enthusiasm for life that hasn't been smacked out of him by the age of 22. So, what is this text message? Oh, okay. Just seemed like a really happy-go-lucky guy, and I'm glad to, I'm happy for him.
Yeah, no, he did well. He, and he came off like pretty charming, sincere, and happy to be there. And a lot of times you just don't see that, so that was nice. On the undercard, not a whole lot to speak of. A couple little highlights. Andre Feely took a short notice fight and beat Hakran Diaz by unanimous decision, 29-28 on all three scorecards. Feely looked really good, I thought, considering he took it on short notice. Diaz weighed in 2.5 pounds overweight. Feely just kind of outstruck him, was competitive on the ground with him, and kind of just beat him on the feet, outstruck him for the most part. Further down the undercard, Nate Marquardt actually defeated Tamden McCrory by knockout with a kind of a crazy head kick that you wouldn't think Marquardt could pull off at this point. other than that, nothing too memorable on the undercard, I didn't think.
No, one of the chicks, they kept pronouncing her name like face hole or something. Instead of, like, thanks, was it five hole or something? It's just something saying her face hole or something like that. It's really freaking weird. Otherwise, I don't know. We've already gone 25 minutes on this shit.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah. Let's change gears. You did not like Daniel Cormier's commentary, though.
Oh, fuck. He was horrible. He was explaining things but getting things wrong. He didn't know who guys were. The best part was he talked about, like, trying to pronounce John Lineker's nickname. And he said, like, I'm trying a little bit of Spanish. And then Giant John Anik just kind of quietly admonished, yeah, it's in Portuguese. And just, I mean, it was just, he was horrible. He just seemed arrogant. Oh, fuck. I hope he never does it again. Like, people thought that Cruz was kind of annoying. He was, like, Dominic Cruz nerd level annoying, but he didn't have any of the nerd knowledge. And he was just, I think I wrote, it sounds like you're listening to the commentary on a video game. They just got pre-planned phrases that you've got to just slide in at the right time. He'd be like, there's a takedown. Well, Joe, you know, when you get that under hook and you move to the double leg, it works really well to secure side control. That's what it seemed like with him. So just fuck Daniel Cormier.
So they still got to find somebody on Joe Rogan's level. Might be a while, though. So I think last week we talked about Khabib and Aldo. They're still bitching and moaning.
Yeah.
Khabib is claiming he will leave the UFC and also stop UFC from expanding into Russia if he does not receive the lightweight title shot after UFC 205. I know Khabib's pretty famous in Russia and Dagestan or whatever Russian state he's from. I don't know if he has that kind of pull, but he claims he does. So I don't know even if UFC ever would have any aspirations to go into Russia to begin with. But he really wants that title shot and will ban them from his home country if he has to.
I actually remember reading a story once about the Dagestani wrestlers and the way they're treated. And they do get, like, an inordinate amount of attention compared to where they are in the world stage and even the UFC stage. Like, Khabib really is kind of like a big deal in Dazakhstan. But first of all, he's not like he can call up the fucking Kremlin and make something happen. I mean, they're non-Russian. I think they're Caucasus, but like they're non-Russian Russians being forced to stay there by Putin. And oh, by the way, they're also all Muslim and Putin's having issues with Islam. So, I mean, and I hope it is true. I love the idea that public negotiations for title shots now include legitimate threats of the Russian mob stopping things from happening or Russian corruption in general. Like, the only thing would be better if Dana White just fired back, yeah, well, I got Donald Trump on my side endorsing me, so we'll have the two of them battle it out for just fucking batshit ass crazy decisions.
Yeah, it's something else. Like, Khabib and Aldo are, like, trying to play the same game, I feel like. Because Aldo's claiming even a McGregor rematch would not bring him back to the UFC. He says he's not interested in snorting cocaine or throwing objects.
Why not?
It's not his thing. He's a professional. What do you think? Is he trying to play for big fight?
He's just whining like a bitch in public. He ain't going anywhere. They got like a billion fights left with them. He's not going to make any money anywhere else. If he doesn't want to fight anymore, then just fucking retire. Say, I'm retired. But don't give me this, I wouldn't even fight Conor. Really? Well, what other top featherweight would you fight anyways? You want Max Holloway? Is that what's going to tickle your fancy? Is that going to get you back in the fucking UFC, you dipshit? If a fight with Conor doesn't do it, just shut up. What a fucking loser.
No, I'm with you. At the same time, I can understand a little bit where he's coming from, because it's like, if they truly promised him the McGregor fight next, and then they go back on their word, it's like, I've worked for you forever, and I've won this many fights, and I'm, you know, I was undefeated as featherweight champ for whatever 7 years, whatever it was, 6 or 7 years. It's like, you know what? Maybe he has a right to tell him to go screw. I don't know.
Oh, like, I understand.
Both sides have an argument. Like, you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying, and everything. There is something to that, particularly when you're dealing with a kid who's just, you know, like intellectually just. I mean, I don't think Aldo finished grade school. You know, just from a poor ass favela, and so people put ideas in his head, and he doesn't. I mean, even by like the strictest standards. Most champions in all those plays would have gotten a lot of leeway. It just happened that the guy that followed him is setting records the sports never even dreamed of. If it was anybody else, yeah, he would have gotten his title shot. There would have been no reason to hold it off. It would have been a great story. Instead, Connor beat your ass in 13 seconds, and it still hasn't even been a year. And Aldo went longer than the goddamn fucking year sometimes defending his title. So maybe he should, you know, shut the fuck up a little bit there. So, I think I had this exact same rant last week. But
what we didn't talk about last week was BJ Penn getting injured.
Oh, yeah.
That just came out today as well. So he's out of the fight with Ricardo Lamas at UFC Fight Night 97, which is taking place in the Philippines on October 15th. So not this weekend, but the following one. No replacement has been named yet. But one guy threw his name in the ring, and that was one Brian Caraway, which is, I don't want to say completely uncharacteristic of him, but to move up in weight 2 weeks out from a fight doesn't really sound like his style from what I've heard about him behind the scenes. But good for him. I don't know how they're going to save that card, because without the Penn-Lamas fight, it's a weak, weak card.
I don't know what the hell Brian Caraway, and there's so many levels in that, none of them make sense. I can see, okay, you want to step up on short notice for something that people are going to watch, but this is a card from the Philippines on Fight Pass only, and the only reason anybody would have watched it is because of the guy you're replacing. They'll find a different fight to be a company man in. Otherwise, I mean... If I'm BJ Penn, I get suspiciously injured a couple weeks before I have to make my debut return flight in the fucking Philippines. The fucking heat, the travel, all that. You want to take a guy who needs every little bit of help he can to be in good shape and then have him fly, I think, about the furthest flight you can in the middle of, like, monsoon season? Are you kidding me? They're dooming Penn to die. If I assume I got injured, be healthy for December in Vegas.
If they can't find a substitute for Penn, do you know what the main event technically would be of that show right now?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Would you like to know?
I have no fucking clue. Is it somebody from China?
Derek Lewis versus Marcin Tybura.
The Black Beast.
That is scary. You know, that's bad.
I don't know if he's injured, but he'd be... Ideally, the best guy to fill in would actually be Felipe Novar. Because the only reason he's even in the UFC is because he's Filipino, and they needed him for the last Filipino show. So, you know, you'd have a 145er who's decent from the Philippines, but otherwise, I don't know, it's the Philippines. It's like, it doesn't matter what kind of crap you put there. If it only comes once every couple of years, you're going to go see it. You've already paid for your fucking tickets. It's not like anybody in Fight Pass, like, yeah, it's a little less on Fight Pass, but you're not going to put anything decent on Fight Pass in this short of notice. Unless Cerrone's willing to do it. I bet he is.
My favorite part of that card is that it starts at 6:45 a.m. Eastern time.
Oh, like, even better, yeah.
That's unbelievable. The main card is supposed to start, like, around 10, which... isn't bad, you know, you get up, you have some breakfast, and you watch some fights. I'd rather do that than try and watch the show at, like, you know, 1 a.m. or start at 11 p.m. I'd rather get it, I don't want to say get it out of the way, but watch it earlier and have the rest of the day as opposed to waiting around for the show to start at night. But
actually, I'll agree with that. I think that if UFCs are always on from, like, just say 9 to 12, it'd be all right. It's just getting all that pre-fight stuff where I'd have to get up early to watch it. But if I could just, you know, wake up and watch only 3 hours, like every other normal sporting event in the world. I mean, nobody ever goes to a fucking 6-hour long baseball game. It's like, oh, that sure was fun. But like, holy shit, we set a record.
Yeah, I wonder if they'd be better off doing more shows but keeping them shorter. I mean, sometimes I think about that. Like, what if they had 2 shows a week and each one was 3 hours? Would that be any better for anybody? Mm. Obviously, there'd be more travel and maybe they couldn't draw as well in each city. But, I mean, I'm guessing Fox is just looking for hours of programming. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think from our perspective, as long as it lasted, that would be the best. I'd rather have it, you know, 2 nights a week or something like that. But just for them, I don't think that they could economically, you know, and feasibly pull it off. I mean, they'll run thin most of the time for shows as is. I mean, we just Derek Lewis headlining shit.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, logistically, it would be a ton more work unless they had like a home arena where they ran a show in Vegas every 2 weeks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They could do something like that, but I mean, it would be a lot more work. Obviously, you gotta, you know, have all the, you know, the cameramen and sound guys and people setting up the cage and doing that twice a week instead of once a week. I'm sure the costs probably wouldn't make sense, but, for me, it would be better.
They're at the point now with what they've got production wise and everything, and I think it'd be fascinating to see an actual live season of The Ultimate Fighter as it takes place. Not the drawn out 3-month version that they have to do for television, but the actual deal where they fight in 6 weeks. So the TV show is only 6 weeks long. Mm-hmm. And every week you see what they actually went through in a given week. I think, yeah, it would suck for TV because you'd only be getting half of a season, but I think you'd see just a dramatically different show, but still somewhat similar. It would really show you how strong and tough it is for these guys to get through this kind of hell. And I think it's a lot easier to build a star when you see him win 3 fights in 6 weeks as opposed to 3 fights in 3 months.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you. So, changing gears here again, no good segues on the show. John Jones' disciplinary hearing was pushed back until November. It was supposed to happen, I believe, this coming Monday. So he's going to be out at least a couple more months. Coincidentally, it was just announced on UFC, whatever, Live, whatever that show is, that Cormier would defend the light heavyweight title against Rumble at UFC 206 in Toronto. So that just is like hot off the presses. And I'm just curious, you think there's a relation there? You think that happened
probably
by accident?
No, but I also think that the whole time you're saying this, I thought you were going to lead up to the joke and it was going to be, John Jones now thinks he has a stronger case for his drug use, given that one of the current owners of the UFC, Maria Sharapova, is also under ban by a world anti-doping agency for cheating and playing sports. And so maybe she's on old John Jones's team there.
She may be. I think she would be.
One of the guys that owns the UFC cheated in drugs playing sports. And they're in the middle of a ban. It's not like it's Barry Bonds or, I don't know, Ghost of Arnold Palmer. I don't know what he did. But it's just kind of weird. Anyways, Cormier and Rumble, just announced it today, like you said. I don't think it's a real coincidence. I will say that Cormier and Rumble obviously was in the works the moment that the last fight just ended. That's the thing about the UFC is that even though they don't need to, they really like to have that main event announced right when tickets go on sale, and those tickets in December in Toronto are going to be going on sale. So that's like why we will see by Halloween, we'll know if Ronda's going to fight this year for the same reason, because those end of the year tickets are going on sale. So,
right.
There's a lot of moving parts, but blah.
So one small note that I think we should make too is that they didn't call it the main event. They're calling it a rematch at UFC 206.
That's true,
I think that they're probably still in negotiations with GSP, but they got to get another big fight on the show in case it doesn't the negotiations fall apart. That could be a huge show if they've got a GSP fight and Cormier Rumble on the undercard. I mean, you're talking about, I don't want to say a million by show. Obviously, it depends who GSP is fighting, but if they did Nick Diaz, GSP, obviously it's not going to be Woodley because Woodley's fighting at 205. So who's GSP going to fight? I know Bisping, who we'll talk about a little bit later, is trying to get that fight with GSP at UFC 206. It'll be interesting to see how that all that plays out.
Yeah, you know what? You put GSP on that card. That's million buys to me. Like, I think
against anybody, you think?
Yeah, I just think, yeah, GSP's return. I think the sport is it's much bigger now than it was when GSP left, in many respects. Yeah. As far as people now get into what they're told are big events, and George St. Pierre's return would be a big event. So I can see people being, okay, this is something important to watch. It's not a Mighty Mouse fight or anything like that. So I think, you know, you have those two fights. That's huge. And you just look at this is the fucking UFC. They have these little dips here and there, whatever. Like, this pay-per-view is a little dip. And then they're going to be right back there with Madison Square Garden, Toronto, and possibly the end-of-the-year show with Ronda, maybe. They could easily break, I would think, closing on 5 million pay-per-view buys off those three shows.
Yeah, it's wild. We've been saying it ever since we started doing these things. The company's hot right now. It's more popular than it's ever been. It's amazing. Speaking of the sport growing and becoming more popular, can you tell me what these people all have in common? Adam Levine, Serena Williams, Tom Brady, Guy Fieri, Mark Wahlberg, and Trey Parker.
They are all business partners with Maria Sharapova.
Yes, in what?
They own the fucking UFC.
Here's the thing I find amusing about that, is that it took, like, you know, whatever, it's been a couple months since the sale went through for this part of the story to come out. And I was reading up a little bit about it. There's not a ton out there. It was a Wall Street Journal article that I'm assuming WME, IMG kind of floated out there and gave to them. But the celebrities, there's 23 of them listed in the article, all put in at least a minimum investment of $250,000. I don't know what that means. I don't know how the return on the investment works. But, I mean, obviously to gather up $4 billion, you need a lot of people to throw in a lot of money. And I think most of these celebrities, they're with WME IMG. They're represented by that company. So Ari Emanuel is just saying they were all really big fans and they would ask for tickets all the time. So he approached them to see if they wanted to invest in buying the company. And I guess he got 23 of them to jump on board and throw in, by the sounds of it, several million dollars.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's a vanity thing. It's the same people that own horses and shit like that. Where, like, it's not like they play with the horses. The horse just, yeah, that's my horse. Like, I own that $750,000 horse there in lane two. Oh yeah, what's his name? It's number seven. I don't know what his name is. I own a horse. Like, I don't play with the horse. I don't feed the horse. I don't breed the horse. I just own it. It's going to be kind of the same. Again, it's just something neat to say. Like, you can't do it anymore, but like all the people in Green Bay, they're so proud to own one single stock of the Green Bay Packers. They can say, I own the team on some minor level.
Right.
And I wonder if...
Like, what, that I understand, though, but somebody like Tom Brady or, you know, Mark Wahlberg, do they really need to own 0.01% of the UFC? Like, who cares? I'm just saying, if I was at that level, I would, like, as a fan, owning part of the Packers sounds kind of cool, but, like, if you're a multimillionaire worth, like, a several hundred million dollars, who cares if you owe 0.01% of the UFC? I don't get it, but I'm also not a huge celebrity, obviously.
I mean, again, if it's a minimum, you figure most of them put in $250,000, we'll just say. I mean, you're Tom Brady. you that's like half a game of work or something. Like and that's on a suspended year, not taking into account his billionaire wife. Like, these people don't have concepts of money. Yeah. It's probably like if somebody asked you and I, you got 250 bucks to throw in to buy something, you'd be like, yeah, I can come up with that. That's not going to break the bank. I mean, it might, but we pay very poorly here at this
but
website.
I would also say, though, what is it?
You know what I mean? Well, yeah.
Granted, most of these people, it's probably their managers and business managers saying, hey, yeah, this seems good, to throw your money in. And they're like, all right. Tom Brady might not even know what the hell's going on with his money. He probably saw that article and was like, ah, I guess I own part of the UFC now. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, they might not even know. When you've got that much money, you've got a team of people who invest it and take care of it for you. So I doubt Ari Emanuel went to each one of them individually and said, hey, you want to pony up some money for this? There was probably a little more to it, but it was an interesting story. It got a lot of play in the press and the media, because it was a whole slew of different celebrities from all different, you know, walks of life, entertainment, athletes, you know, Bob Kraft, LL Cool J, just a lot of random odd people that really you wouldn't.
Yeah, again, put together. When you have Maria Sharapova and the Wahlberg dude owning the
Conan
same,
O'Brien.
And Conan Stallone. O'Brien. Like, yeah, these are a very odd mix of, it probably paid nothing and got like a tax break from Emmanuel, but I think it's actually, I know he's not the government, you know what I mean. I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, look, it's always cool to have these things. Usually you see this on like struggling things, like Magic Johnson owns a whole bunch of shit in Los Angeles. Like every time there's a new soccer team, he's got a little share in it. And when, you know, they sold the Clippers, oh, he's got a tiny little share. Like, he never puts in very much money, but they trot him out. He's a celebrity, blah, blah, blah. I'm wondering if a lot of this is done, especially in anticipation of what I think will probably be starting soonish, the renewal rights on TV. And when they, yeah. And when he can say, hey, I got this company making all this money, doing all these ratings. By the way, look at who are some of the celebrities that I guarantee are going to be sitting there in the front row. And I can, yep. You know, you kind of do business like this in the 1950s, and you slide a couple of 50s underneath the deck of cards, and they give you a free drink or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just one more step to making, you know, the UFC seem more mainstream. Big name celebrities involved. They're probably going to be at the show. You know, Jimmy Kimmel and Conan O'Brien both are in on it, so they'll probably have more fighters on their shows. It's just more exposure, more name recognition. To me, there's no harm in it. I mean, are the celebrities investing in it worse than some company in China investing in it? Not in my mind.
No, hell, they're even better, because you know they're not going to do anything. They just want to be on TV. So they're like the smart people make the decisions.
Yeah, I love the idea of like Guy Fieri like storming into like the Vegas headquarters and arguing with Dana White about like the next like who's going to fight next in the Philippines. There's just like a funny, like, I've got this fun. Obviously, they have no power. They're silent partners or whatever you want to call them. But I was just running through that, like them lined up outside Dana's office going in to bitch to him about like their seats at the next show or whatever it might be.
Meanwhile, he's got all of them blocked on Twitter. He's like, oh my gosh, just fuck, let it go. No, I know you own it, but I'm not going to give you. No, you can't fight. I know that the other guy did. I know. It was, he got beat up. Real. No, I know you're an athlete guy, but come on, like, you're. I know he was old and not in shape and didn't do well, but I just. Oh God, fine. You can fight in the fucking company. Call up Kevin James. I don't care.
So let's move to this weekend. I think we covered most of the news from the past week. There's two shows this weekend that actually might be worth watching. It's not always the case. Sometimes there's several shows on and none of them are worth watching. On, let's see, Friday night, October 7th, we've got World Series of Fighting 33, in Kansas City. In the main event, we've got a lightweight title fight with Justin Gaethje, versus Ozzy Dugolobegov. Then also on the card, there's David Branch defending the light heavyweight title versus Vinny Magalesh, Jason High versus Zeferino. Just kind of a good card for them. Sean Jordan debuts for them. Just better than a lot of their shows. It's got some talent on it. The main card's pretty good. There's six fights on it. Again, this one starts at 11 p.m., which is kind of frightening, because there are six fights on the card. This thing could be going till 2 a.m., no sweat. But a solid card from them. They haven't had a show in a while. Just kind of something different to watch, another approach at MMA, I guess.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere. When you said, like, there's another show this weekend, I'm going, no, there's not. I checked, there's no Bellator. There's no Bellator. And then I'm like, oh, World Series of Fighting, the company that runs tournaments and then doesn't run any more shows forever. But, I mean, you know, this actually looks like a very good card, which is we're UFC cast-offs who don't want to leave Las Vegas, and we're hoping to stay in the UFC's radar. And that's what it is. I mean, that's mostly what, you know, John Howard's in there and stuff like that. Like, guys who have no business going to Bellator, so they're just going to milk what they can get.
I mean, I like Gaethje. I mean, he's undefeated. He's 16-0. I mean, he's always pretty much looked good. I mean, he's defended their lightweight title 5 times now. It's against lesser competition, but most of his wins are TKO wins. He's looked really good.
Yeah, he's UFC caliber for sure. I think he's top 10 talent wise. But I mean, and Vinny, you know, they got decent guys, and then they're gonna give Jake Shields versus John Fitch someday.
Yes, finally, the dream fight we've all been waiting for. Yeah, but anyway, decent show. I recommend checking it out. It's got some names and some good action fights on the show and two title fights. So it's worth watching. Some of their shows from, like, you know, the indoor soccer stadiums that ROH would do their shows at aren't always the best, but this one looks solid. Then on Saturday night, we've got UFC 204, which is headlined by, Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson, number 2. It's coming from the Manchester Arena in Manchester, England. Obviously, big rematch between Bisping and Henderson. We've talked about it in the past. Not my favorite title fight of all time by any stretch. I'd probably argue it's the worst middleweight title fight ever as far as talent and rankings go. Currently, right now, Henderson is ranked 13th in the middleweight division. We talk about guys deserving title shots. Who doesn't? Does McGregor really deserve a lightweight title shot against Eddie Alvarez? Maybe not. But does Henderson really deserve this shot? No. On top of that, he might be a better draw than the big four, you know, Rockhold, Weidman, Romero, Jacare. But I don't think it's a huge difference. I don't think a lot of people – it's not – I don't think it's 100,000 by swing by having Hendo in this fight. He's never been a huge draw to begin with, and at this point it's like he's 3-6 in his last 9. And I looked it up earlier today. In the last 10 years since 2006, Dan Henderson is 12-10. It's something
that's a lot of fights in 10 years for an old man.
I'm not saying it's not impressive for his age, but it's like he hasn't been an elite fighter in the last, I don't want to say 10 years because that's really mean, but he peaked at 36. That's normal. He's fought the last 10 years and gone 500. So I'm not mad about fights or what they do. I don't really care, but this is a bad title fight. I think there's some nostalgia involved. Henderson has said this will be his last fight either way. He's going to retire whether he wins the belt or he loses. He's kind of promised that. Although today he said he feels he could fight for 2 or 3 more years, but this will be my last fight. So it'll be interesting to see how this one goes. I favor Bisping big time, but I just think he's younger, he's quicker, he's got the reach. I don't think he'll circle to his left as much as he did in that first fight. I think he's a smarter fighter now than he was back then as well. And Henderson's, you know, 46-3-6 in his last nine. And I rewatched the Lombard fight with Henderson, the last fight he won, and he got rocked and took a lot of shots in that fight. He managed to win it, but I mean, Lombard's past his prime as well. I just don't feel like Henderson has a good shot in this, but again, anything can happen. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, I would feel bad for the English fans that they have to stay up till 4 in the morning, their time or whatever, just to watch this. On the other hand, they'll all be drunk, so we could have something crazy happen. And finally, and most importantly, this show is taking place in Manchester, and Manchester is an evil city filled with evil fucking football clubs, and I guarantee you I'm going to fucking troll Manchester United fans all fucking night with my commentary. I have so many gifts of Liverpool scoring on Manchester that it's fucking wonderful. You guys get to go out there and you can have a really nice little story with Bisping and Henderson. I would have booked it above the other stuff. I don't know if it draws great in the United States. I think it's a bigger draw in the UK. I think it's just is so perfect. It allows one of them to close off a big, either a career or a big chunk of a career. And it's true, Dan Henderson didn't deserve this. But on the flip side, how about we just say Michael Bisping deserved this chance at redemption? He did everything he can. He now has a chance to erase the one loss of his career that is truly haunting. Like, very few men will ever lose. And he's lost, like, spinning back kicks from Vitor Belfort. He's had some bad losses, but that one is haunting. I mean, that thing defines the UFC for a generation.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with it if it wasn't for the title. Like, rematch, that's fine, no big deal, but it's just like such a farce. And again, I like the storyline. I think, you know, Bisping going in for redemption and getting the win back and overcoming that loss, there's a good storyline there. Or the 46-year-old, you know, former Olympian, former Pride middleweight champ, you know what I mean? Coming in at 46 years old and finally winning a UFC title is a great storyline. I think it'll be a great moment either way. Dan Henderson pulls off the upset, good story. Michael Bisping wins in his hometown or home country, whichever, and the crowd goes nuts and he gets his win back and he defends the middleweight title for the first time. Either way, great story. It's fun. But at the heart of it, competitively, from a sporting aspect, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Who are you picking in that one? Who do you like?
I have to say Bisping because it's Bisping, and he is young. Like you said before, he's younger. It's crazy to me to think of how young he must have been in their first fight, because like he's only like 37. I'm like, God, he was a lot younger back then. I mean, I know that's how time works, but still, I'm watching a dog try to dig a hole in my bed so you can stick his fat snout in there. You can do it whatever you want, just win a baseball game. As far as, like, my only real hiccup is Dan Henderson still does hit hard as hell. Michael Bisping's chin is still, not like it's gotten better over the years. And it's the old, it only takes one, and I mean, you can say what you will, and it's all true, but Dan Henderson's right hand has been the one pure strike, I think, in MMA you can reliably say that one might just land and end it. I don't think it'll happen. I think Bisping's quicker. I think he'll actually probably take Henderson out by TKO. I think he's just gotten a lot smoother with his striking. I thought when you saw with Anderson Silva, was no accident. What he did with Luke Rockhold, again, no accident. Not that he's necessarily sitting down on his left hook more, but you know, I think he's a much better striker now than he was when he fought Henderson. And
so do I.
And I think that's the biggest difference. I think he takes him out by TKO.
Do you think at this point Bisping could out wrestle him? at this stage in the game with Henderson where he is. Mm-hmm. Like, I almost feel like he could take Henderson down.
Oh, I think I think
that sounds crazy.
No, it's not crazy. Anybody else would be crazy, but Dan Henderson has been taken down throughout his career. Like, he's very good at scrambling and getting up and taking people down, but like, he gets taken down way more than you'd expect for being an Olympian.
Right. No, that's what I thought. So, okay, cool. We're on the same page. In the co-main, we've got Vitor Belfort versus Gegard Mousasi. Again, you've got another guy in Belfort, you know, no more TRT, getting a little long in the tooth. He's pushing 40 now. He's 39. Coming off a loss to Jacare by TKO back in May. You know, 1-2 in his last three. Got destroyed by Weidman as well. I mean, I like Mousasi, but that's me. I think he's younger. He's a quicker striker. At this point, I think he's really well-rounded and one of the more underrated guys really in the entire UFC, I think, not just the middleweight division, but the whole company. He does not get the credit he deserves.
I have to start off, and I'm going to make sure this plays through my microphone. Hold on.
Okay.
Play, you piece of shit. I'll just...
I heard something that sounded like cheering.
It should. All right, that's enough of that. That's 15 seconds of the national anthem of the country of Turkey.
Was anyone kneeling during it?
No. However, some of my history buffs out there should be appreciating what that reference is towards. Because at the time, Turkey, also known as the Ottoman Empire, maybe, kind of, sort of, massacred 900,000 Armenians in the 1920s. So, therefore, I played the Turkish national anthem in support of the efforts to eradicate MMA of Armenians. And you, Gegard Mousasi, are somehow Armenian, despite being born in Iran and growing up in the Netherlands. You still are somehow Armenian. And so... you are a better fighter than Vitor Belfort right now. You're a more versatile fighter. You're, like Matt said, very underrated. You're good at what you do. I'm doing a lot of my picks as, like, little, you know, soliloquies to the fighters, but whatever. That was an aside. Put that in the parenthetical. But you're a very good fighter. You're better on the ground. You got good ground and pound. If you have a weakness, objectively, it's I don't think you have a real bite down in your mouth guard and fight hard, which is sad because I think Vitor Belfort's got more of a heart than you do at this point. You just got to get past a blitz early on, and you'll probably win. But you just know that your time is coming, and you will not. You should enjoy this, because this is not going to last forever. You Armenian piece of shit. All right, I'm done.
Good. Below that, we've got OSP, Ovin St. Preux versus Jimmy Manuwa. Stefan Struve's fighting. What else is on here?
They just moved up one of the prelim fights, the fucking main card. No one cares.
Yeah, I'm just anything on the undercard you're looking forward to?
Brad Pickett's fight. Just because Brad Pickett's always fun.
Okay,
but that's the only thing that jumps out. There's like a guy, I think his name is Davy Grant, as I wrote on the website one place, the most English name of all time. Like, nobody's ever, like, somebody looks at the kids like, what should we name him, Mr. Grant? Davy. Then he'll fit in with all the other school children here in Worcestershire. A real name of a real town, both in New England and in regular England.
There. Albert Tumanov's on the undercard. He usually has good fights. He's a good striker. Yeah, but otherwise, not a lot jumping out at me. Anything else going on?
No.
No, we covered it all. We did good. That was an hour. That was good.
Oh, really? Oh, fucking A. We did hit it just right.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, we're getting better at this.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be like an hour and a half all of a sudden.
It could have been. I'm trying to keep it moving.
Hey, see that, everybody? The kid's learning. I'm doing less and less. Yeah. And your dog, he didn't do anything bad. So anyways, everybody, thanks for listening to the soon-to-be-renamed show eventually here at halfguarded.com. And as always, ooh, I burped. That's a good way for me to end it. Matt, say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. See you. Talk to you next week.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy.